The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
So we're joined by the actor-musician Matt Fraser, who is coming to Galway with Unspeakable Conversations, which will be on at the Galway International Arts Festival. Matt, thank you for joining us. What is Unspeakable Conversations?
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Unspeakable Conversations is a play based on a debate that was had between one of the most famous philosophers in the world, who's currently a professor at Princeton University, called Peter Singer. And he famously wrote the book Animal Liberation, which was the birth of the modern animal liberation movement. But he also famously thinks that more disabled newborns should be euthanized to make way for healthy babies so that society doesn't feel the burden, I think, or words to that effect. And he argued with a woman called Harriet McBride Johnson, who was a famous disability activist, and their argument formed a series of letters that were then published in the New York Times and became a sort of celebrated debate about the deep essence of the morality of that kind of argument. And what we've done is taken, well, Christine O'Reilly, the writer, and us have all worked together to bring it onto the stage. And, you know, when there's a debate between two academics, intellectually rigorous and interesting as it may be, it's not necessarily dramatically good or as a good narrative. So myself and Liz Carr, who's the other actor in the show, also a disabled actor, a wheelchair user she is, play ourselves and the two characters, Peter and Harriet, and we flit between the two, sort of commenting on the situation and being ourselves, mirroring scenes and doing all that clever theatre stuff that Alwyn Fuere and the team are so good at.
Alwyn, who is directing this.
Sorry.
No, that's a very comprehensive answer. When exactly did this debate that has prompted the construction of the play take place?
It took place in 2003 to 2008, but the original one was way back in 2003, and it's lain in print as a potentially exciting debate to have on stage for a long, long time. And I believe it was the academic Rosemary Garland Thompson got in touch with Christian to see if he could deal with it. And then he worked with it for quite a few years, and it wasn't quite coming together as perhaps he would have liked. And then we all jumped on board and all got in it together. And it's really come to life. And I mean, I'm in the middle of rehearsals now, and we are having a whale of a time. I mean, it's not a comedy, I'll admit that. There's a lot of really funny bits in it, because me and Liz are naturally funny people. And, you know, the absurdity of desperation sometimes leads to great humour. And the Irish are no strangers to that. And neither are disabled people. And, you know, we've not worked in Ireland before together, not with a team that devised the work. And that's one of the things the Irish theatre people, from my English perspective at least, are so good at, you know, rolling the sleeves up, getting into the text, getting into the meanings, the themes, the layers, and making it a really interesting piece of work. It's quite confrontational, this piece of work. I would say not for the faint-hearted, but, most theatre that is difficult is worthwhile. When I say difficult, listeners, please don't think it's a boring show. It's just dealing with some concepts that maybe make you think about what you think about those things.
Tell me, please, about your personal interest in this because of your own physical impairment.
Well, I will. I'd be glad to. You know, I'm a thalidomider, as we thalidomide guys, people call ourselves. You all had that in Ireland too.
We do, but you know, Matt, there's probably a generation of people who actually don't know about this from the 1960s.
Right,
so can you explain it maybe to them, please?
I can. Well, back in the olden days of the late 50s and 60s, the only sleeping pills you could take were barbiturates, which meant that if you took too many, you died. And then the German company Chemigrünsol invented a new pill that was the world's first non-barbiturate painkiller. They also marketed it, most importantly, for morning sickness. So lots of pregnant women who were feeling poor in the first trimester of their pregnancy, took this pill, not knowing that it deformed the fetuses. There was a lot of coming and going and toing and froing and medical hoo-ha, and about 15 years later, it all came out. And so what happens is you have a little rash of people, about 5,000 of us around the world, that were all born within 4 years of each other and all have the little arms or little legs or a mixture of all of that. And then that's basically it. And it's because of our drug thalidomide that the back of every pill bottle says, if you're pregnant, please seek the advice of a physician before taking this drug. So my connection to the story is visceral, because only about two-thirds, three-quarters of thalidomide babies made it out of the hospitals. A lot of us were euthanized. A lot of people thought, the poor thing, they'll never get anywhere. You know, it'll be for the best if we just, you know, do the thing.
And sorry, what thing? Were thalidomide babies deliberately killed after birth?
Well, there's no empirical evidence of that, but only 75% of us got out there. A lot of the, you know, we failed to remember how shocking it was for everybody at the time. Mothers, parents, nurses, doctors were dumbfounded. They just didn't know what to do. And, you know, when faced with a formalin deficient crying baby and you're used to perfect babies, maybe in your weakened state of shock, you might think that it's best for everything considered to end the life of the baby. I personally don't think that. And I know a lot of people in Ireland don't think that either. But what's important, this show gets down to the fundamental principle of the moral significance of what we're doing and what happens. But it also talks about disabled people. We have a lot of fun. We talk about society as a whole. Everyone's got an opinion. Everyone is a member of society, after all. Whilst it is a brow-furrowing subject on some level, it's also a great fun show that has a whole smorgasbord of emotions. And, you know, we really take you around the world on this show. 1 hour 15, roughly, of intense theatre with me and Liz, who are old sparring partners, very much the yin and yang of a full circle, I think, with the wonderful work that our Irish dramatic team have been putting with us. And, you know, just as a personal thing, it's a real pleasure to work with Kelly and Matt and Toby and all the other people associated. But it's for a long time I've wanted to work with Olwen Fuere, and she is not disappointing, I'll tell you that.
Matt, I'm still fascinated by your own story, because you're a man now in your early 60s and you've had a long career in the arts. So what sort of life have you had with this physical impairment, which was so unique? It's not unique, but so rare, particularly growing up and moving into adulthood.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, a difficult one, because I chose such a difficult job for somebody that looks so different. I was a punk rock and heavy metal drummer for the first 25 years of my life, which I know people think, oh, how did you do the drums? Well, the human brain can get around pretty much anything, as we all know. So let's just move on from that one. I just did, okay? But I enjoyed the life of it and the rock and roll lifestyle, shall we say. And then I discovered disability and my politics and how the two connected, and became an actor. I wanted to talk about it on stage. And so that began that phase of my life, which I'm still doing. And over the years, I've done my fair share of confrontational shows. You know, I wrote a show called Thalidomide, a musical, which was a bad taste comedy musical, which, you know, had varied reviews, shall we say. And I've ended up sort of, you know, as the industry of television and theatre have become more conducive to having disabled people in them. So I've begun to branch out and have a little bit of TV work here and there.
I've just realised, Matt, I now know who you are, from Loudermilk.
That's me. That's me.
That's you.
From Loudermilk.
That's terrific. I love that show.
Do you know how that happened? So I got a silly award, a SAG-AFTRA Media Access Award. And I'd never been to an award ceremony before, let alone in Beverly Hills. So I went. And it was full of platitudes of charity people going, you know, we are the world, it's beautiful. It wasn't quite the sort of understanding of disability I was down with. But this one guy, Pete Farrelly of the Farrelly Brothers, said, guys, what's the problem? Just put them in your movies. They're humans. We're humans. Let's all live together. Let's show that on screen. You know, and afterwards I said, mate, that was the only sensible thing I said all day. Thank you. He then invited me to dinner. And at the dinner, he said, I'm doing this new TV show. I think you'd be good to audition for it. Then 6 months later, I had nothing. And then 6 months later, he called me up and said, Matt, we're doing that TV show. We don't have time to audition you. Let's just say you're in it. I've seen you act. You can do the job. We're going to call you Roger. How's that? And I was like, great. Fantastic. And so that happened. And then when I got on set, we sort of honed the character over the first season, as all the people in the group, I consist of half of us are actors and the other half are stand-up comedians who just were friends of Pete Farrelly or ne'er-do-wells like myself. So I've ended up on one of the best shows ever. It was such fun to do. It was such a great atmosphere and I felt so equal in that show. I really did.
Matt, I'm trying to remember the storyline. Wasn't it that you were the drummer in the band and then there was supposed to be a beer advert and the makers of the advert suddenly, hang on, we can't have him playing the drums. Yeah, can we replace him?
Thing. Yeah, that was it. That was it. We can we replace them? And then eventually I realised that I don't want to be promoting getting wasted, which is what fundamentally they were, the advert was doing. Because it's about sobriety. You know, a lot of people enjoy that show, Loudermilk, but one of the greatest things, I get a lot of ex-addicts and recovering people saying that they really like the show because it's the first one they've seen that looks real and reminds them of what their journey was like. So that's really nice to know. And I mean, I'm thrilled and bowled over by the fact that everybody likes Loudermilk because we were kind of lost in the nowhere land on Amazon Prime. Then Netflix took it up and suddenly people are watching it and I'm getting shout outs from people as glamorous as even yourself.
No, it's terrific stuff. I really enjoyed it. And now suddenly the penny has just dropped that you were the man from Loudermilk. And
that's pretty much most people on the street nowadays, because it used to be all, oh, he was in American Horror Story. Now all I get is people more our age or my age saying, oh, nice one for Loudermilk. You know,
sorry, what did you do in American Horror Story? It must have been something that I missed.
Oh, it was in season 4, Freak Show. I played a real freaky guy who was tattooed. Not that it's that freaky anymore to have your face tattooed by looking at things on the high street. But I was fully tattooed, kind of the Seal Boy, kind of edgy Freak Show character, as we all were in that season. But I got a lot of, cool kudos. Lots of pierced and tattooed people seem to like me after that. And now I'm getting middle-aged husbands who like me because of Loudermilk.
I'll take
any demographic as long as they like me.
But this suggests, I mean, maybe this is something a 21st century phenomenon in that there is a greater diversity and inclusion when it comes to roles and parts in movies and television.
I think so. I really think that is the case. And, you know, all the struggles and angst of my early 20s and 30s where, frankly, it was, I would have called it a cultural apartheid, really. I mean, they just didn't want disabled people anywhere near them. That's completely changed now. And through all the other movements, the black movement, the women's movement, the trans movement, the disability movement, you know, all these movements, painful as they might be for cultural change, but they do mean that new people get to have a look in. And so it's lovely that I'm not the only disabled person in a production. Like, at the end of August, coming out on Netflix is something called Chaos, K-A-O-S. And that when I got to the set, I was stunned to find there were 200 disabled actors in the show. That had never happened to me before. So things really are changing, you know. And I'm blooming glad of it. But I got to return to 2009, the doom years, when nobody wanted me except Bridget DeCourcy. The producer of Fair City had me come and be in Fair City for 6 glorious weeks, and I'll never forget that. One of the great experiences of my life. And I still think about being in a dressing room with McLean Burke and the crack we had. Such lovely people. I know people can say what they want about Fair City, and they do. I think it's great.
You even picked up a full understanding of the word the crack, which you just dropped in there.
Yes.
Okay. Well, listen, it's been great talking to you, Matt Fraser. Unspeakable Conversations is on in the Galway International Arts Festival. I think it's on from the 14th to the 20th of July, is it, in the McLally Theatre?
14th to the 28th.
To the 28th of July. Excellent. Yep. In Druid Lane. Brilliant. Yep. Thank you so much for being with us, Matt.
And thank you so much. All the best. Have a great day.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.
American Log Homes and Cabins is assisting a developer in liquidating several of our kits that have deposits on them for only the balance owed. Most of these will save you more than half of the original cost. An example, our Augusta model, normally $42,450, is being sold for $16,500. Our Biloxi model, normally $36,825, is being sold for $14,500. This includes delivery, excluding California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Idaho, Alaska, and Hawaii, but we will pay partial shipping to those states. These kits have not been manufactured, and there's no time limit on delivery. This is a log home kit that includes complete blueprints from foundation details to roof, stack sheets, and a construction manual. Any do-it-yourselfer or builder can erect the logs. Kits do not include any part or roof, windows, or doors. Please call 704-602-3035 for availability. You can also visit our website at www.americanloghomesandcabins.com.